there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. Today me and Rune are doing our old friend Tom Cruise for the second time. That's I don't know what to say about that, but it fits us this time. Mission Impossible, what is it, six,
I think.
Fallout. Let's just get right into it. Rune, what are you drinking?
Well, even though we're recording in the middle of the morning here, I thought we were actually doing beer still.
Yeah.
So
that is actually the point I wanted to make, that we're doing this like Sunday morning at 10. And this is...
Well, your time.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, 12.
It's a little bit more legal for me because it's half past 12.
Yeah, and I overslept as well. So I sound like this and I only had coffee. And I was like... I was, you know, optimistic yesterday that I would be using beer. I don't know. We'll have to see.
No.
We'll have to see.
Yeah. You don't have any beer right now.
I have water. I have two cups of coffee in me.
Good.
And it's probably for the best that this microphone doesn't pick up breath, smells. You know?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and also that the camera between
us. It might pick up the haze, the camera. Probably. We'll see.
Maybe.
So let's just...
But I had prepared for a regular show, not a morning show. Yeah. So I got a stout, an Irish stout.
Okay.
Right now, I'm feeling a little bit uneasy about drinking that at this hour. But anyway, anything for the show, right?
Yeah.
So here goes.
It's a midday beer.
It's a midday beer. I mean, you can have midday beers.
Yeah, let's hear the pouring.
Yes, it's coming
up. It's exciting.
Just about now.
Wow. That is some... Well, is it professional pouring? Is it the right angle?
I think so. Yeah. I would say so. I think there are different techniques. Some like to pour it so there's a big head. Some... don't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to aim for not so much head.
But some. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dark as a stout should be.
Yeah.
And it smells caramel-ish.
Yeah, okay. Let's hear it. How is it? Yeah.
It's stout. It's a little bit burnt.
It's stouty. Okay.
Yeah. It's not the... That's the vocabulary for describing beer, apparently. But it's a stout. It's 5%, so it's basically like a normal Danish Pilsner anyway.
It's
so
good. You're like...
I'm feeling good.
I kind of want to get a beer now. In Iceland, we don't drink beer, you know, in the morning. Except when we go to the airport. Then it's like people's duty to send a picture of oneself having beer or something at like 6 a.m. at the airport.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. It is weird. And I don't do it, but it's weird. Yeah.
In Denmark, we always have this saying when you're, if you're having a bet, then the price could be a beer at the airport.
All right.
So it's like, hey, should we bet on that? Yeah, I'll give a beer in the airport.
Cool.
Okay.
Cool.
I have never understood why.
No, but it's maybe it's in this some kind of a heritage thing, you know,
probably
from the old days. But flights
from the old days
here.
when Vikings
very
took the planes
early, always, as you know,
Yeah,
so
very early,
you have to get up, wake up like 3 a.m. or something. It's
also
annoying.
Because Reykjavik is 40 minutes away from the actual airport as well. And then 2 hours before,
all
that kind of stuff, all that jazz.
True. But
anyway,
Rune, what have you
been up to?
you just did that, okay.
Yes,
what am
I did
into?
That.
Okay, I have stuff to tell. You know, I've been getting into podcasts for real now. It's funny,
nice.
I've been doing this for 2 years, and I've been listening to Stuff You Should Know for a while. Listening to like 100 episodes or something of that. Stuff I picked out, stuff I want to, you know, listen to. But in these past 3 weeks, because it's been 3 weeks since we recorded, our last show was like recorded a week early, you know, so we got a little break there. I've been listening to Marc Maron, WTF podcast. So I think I'm under the influence of that guy. I like that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just if I start calling you motherfucker or talking too fast or something, you just let me know, you know?
Okay.
But he's good. He's really good. These are good, really good interviews.
Okay. And
what he's doing is totally different from what we do. I mean, we are like, by choice, laid back and relaxed. And but he has this monologue and he calls people, you know, what the fuckers and all that, you know, as you know. But but he it's interviews and monologues, so it's totally different from what we do. But again, I've been listening to it and I've listened to a lot of good interviews. I'll just name a few. Ted Danson, Mary Steenburgen. Love her. Love her. We got to do Parented.
Yeah.
It fits the premise of our show.
Okay.
And it's this great film. And she is so nice. Love her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris O'Dowd, Mila Kunis. She actually said no when he asked her, are you doing another Bad Moms?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, it's the right answer. It's the right answer.
Yeah. Okay. But she said yes in the end, though.
Did she?
Right?
Well, she I kind of sensed she knows it's crap. I sensed it, but she talked about how fun it was to make and good people, and she was working with Catherine Hahn, which is great.
Yeah.
And all that, but...
The best one in that movie.
She's good.
yeah.
I want to kind of get through this. Billy Bob Thornton, Holly Hunter.
Okay.
Jason Alexander, Sean Penn, Obama.
Okay.
And
wow.
Bradley Whitford. But so you get ideas. I mean, I want to do Parented now.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Want to do interviews maybe also.
I don't know. It didn't like that kind of a fire under me, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that guy.
Okay. I really need to check it out. I put it on my list of podcasts I need to check out, but It's hard to get started on a new podcast where you don't know the format, the character, all that jazz.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes of monologue and he talks about his life and he's honest about it and he's a character, of course. Then it's on to show business interviews and he has this way of getting under people's skin. Maybe it's not the right wording, but He gets stuff out of people. He talks about they talk about their past and childhood and wherever they have been through and it's good stuff. Yeah, you should check it out. Maybe start with
not
Billy
the first
Bob Thornton.
Okay.
Start with Billy Bob because that guy he was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I know that Billy Bob has all kinds of food allergies and anxieties and it's just he really got into how he is really. He's this big movie star, but he's not really, he's just the regular guy with a whole lot of problems, you know.
But then again, is that kind of stuff something you actually want to know? Like, we're probably going to talk a little bit about this with the new Mission Impossible movie later.
Yes.
Also, when there's a lot of stuff that you know about the actual character, does it affect how you watch the movies afterwards?
That's a good point, Rune. That's a good point. But in this regard to WTF, it's just, for me, it's about the interviews. You know, he does good interviews, and it doesn't really matter if it's show business people or not. It's just you get somewhere with the person sitting there. So that's it.
You know, interviews can, like, it doesn't even matter who it is that you're interviewing.
No.
The slice of life from someone is amazing to listen to.
That's exactly right. So this is the podcast for that. Plus, you like show business and you want to know, you don't want to get to know people like stars. You know, Mary Steenburgen, she is. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always liked her also. She was in one of my favorite movies as a kid, What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Yes. She's done a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mainly remember her from Parenthood because I just like it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it Parenthood or Parentette?
Parenthood.
Yes.
Steve Martin. Parenthood. Steve Martin.
Yes. The Steve Martin thing. Yeah. It's a good movie.
Yeah. It might
be. Yeah. And Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
Could be a double feature with John Wick 3 down the line. Or Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure. That's probably more along the character that Keanu plays there.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we should do anyway.
Yeah. Have you been watching anything other than listening?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've gotten into... just to link this to WTF, I mean, I got into The Good Place because I listened to the Ted Danson interview.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's written by Michael Shore, who was co-creator of Parks.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, yeah, that guy, I'm following that guy, even though I didn't like the lineup there. And it turns out it's funny. It's well written, but I don't want to be mean, but I just don't like Kristen Bell.
No.
I just don't. And it's not a Bad Moms thing. I was thinking the whole time, I've been like through 6 or 7 episodes of that first season. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking the whole way through, why wasn't this Leslie Knope type of, you know, actress? What does she call Leslie Knope again?
Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler. Why didn't Amy Poehler do this? Or someone of that caliber?
Well, everyone can't be Amy Poehler.
Yeah, you know. Good point.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been up to quite a few TV series lately.
All right.
Actually, before we went to Brussels, Edin and I started Hotel Beausejour, which was a Belgian TV series, crime series that had a bit of a twist because we were following the investigation of a murder from the perspective of the murdered, the girl who actually had been murdered. Who for some reason were able to see, like be seen by a handful of people. So that whole aspect of it was actually like, it was fun. It was a different premise.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we haven't watched it to the end because it begins to be a soap opera.
Damn.
Like it really, like towards the middle, it's way too long. I think it's plus 10 episodes.
Okay.
And they don't set up the universe well enough. Like you don't get the stakes of the universe.
Okay.
Even though you really need to spend time on figuring out how is the relationship between basically what is ghosts, you know? Ghosts and the real world, and they really don't do that. Sometimes they use it for effect, like certain situations, and then usually they just glance over it. And this ghost is picking up a phone in front of people, and you know that this phone would be floating in front of them, but they just disregard that whole thing.
Okay.
So it's like very disconnected.
Okay.
But it's a very fun, like in the beginning, I was very intrigued because they were taking it in a different direction. So, yeah.
But too long.
It's on Netflix. You know, it's too
stretch
long.
Stretch it out. It's been known to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something someone will like. I really did like the premise of it. So, But Hotel Beausejour, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
I wanted to talk to you about Big Little Lies because you recommended it so highly to us and we finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good stuff, isn't it?
It is amazing.
Yeah, but it's very good, but it's not like without its flaws though, is it?
You don't think so?
No, I don't. I mean,
is anything really?
No, I really liked it. We were really engaged all the way through and so much good about it. Construction, the dialogue pace, exceptional performances there.
The music.
Yeah. Especially the
kids.
Music. Kids, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Like the focus on kids and like situations in school, like Like, I loved how they juxtaposed, you know, the kids' world and the parents' world, and how everything is just like still the same, you know.
Yeah. It bothered me a little bit that they just, but it like I it didn't bother me in the end because it's the right choice. But yeah, they dangle this incident in front of you the entire way through. Maybe maybe mostly first four or something. You're just thinking, when is this fucking thing gonna happen, man?
Yeah. Come on.
And then you get on board with that whole thing.
I do like you. It's been a while since I watched it. I do remember this one part that I really wanted them to skip entirely.
Yeah.
And that is the interview part. The interview about the incident.
Maybe they overuse it a bit in the beginning.
I think it worked in the first episode.
Yeah.
But having people try to fledge out these characters that we're following along, they're trying to give them different kinds of characteristics, like their points of view. Like that person was always a little bit weird, one of these interview people are saying. And you get all that in the acting because the acting is so good. So it seems very redundant that you need this extra layer of commentary on top of what you're seeing.
I think it's just a part of the characterization, which is one of the best things about this thing. But I think they overuse it in the first part of the series little bit, and it makes you annoyed that you don't know what happened. The whole dramatization and it's funny. It also, it's a great acting. I mean, I really liked Reese Witherspoon. She didn't get the awards.
No.
Skarsgård and Kidman and Dern got the awards. But I think she was the star for me. She was really good. And Adam Scott there, it's always good to see that guy.
Yeah. I guess it could be Amy Poehler switching out Reese Witherspoon. Like a different version of Pawnee.
Yeah, I don't know. They were good choices with the cast all the way through, I think.
I love how Reese Witherspoon is always this all-American persona. Like in the beginning of her career, I was slightly annoyed with her because she seemed too much to me to handle somehow. Like she was just all in on being a little bit superficial, a little bit like, I don't know. I don't know how to put it.
You're really talking about the Legally Blonde thing, or?
Yeah, for instance, like Legally Blonde, it's kind of the same, along the same lines. Also, like Election with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
That kind of character that she's playing, but she's doing it so well.
She's doing it really well. And it's difficult to do.
And you see how there's layers in her character
in
this show. And I mean, she's just an amazing actress.
She's very, very, very good.
Because she can manage to be very unlikable and likable at the same time and show that facade that everybody is having.
Yeah, it's people get to shine here. And that's due to the characterization. It's their characters are so rounded, and that's a good part of it to tell us how people see these characters from the outside, with their own prejudices and all that. So it's a part of it. It's very, very good. Yeah. There is stuff I didn't like. I think there's a plot hole, pretty big one.
Okay.
Yeah, and that is the fact that although this doesn't take place in that many days, it's a few weeks, you know. I think that I'm gonna try to do this without the spoilers, but there's an incident that happens in the in the school, in the beginning, you know, with Laura Dern's daughter.
Yes. Yeah,
and I just think that would have resolved itself in like a day or two if they would have just These are six-year-olds. It's not difficult to get stuff out of them. And they leave it all the way through. I mean, it's a bit, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous, really. I mean, if something like that is going on, you just find out from the kids. It's very mm-hmm. simple. These are six-year-olds. They are not like evil geniuses hiding things. It's a pretty big fucking plow hole for me.
Yeah. I think it worked.
It worked, yeah. Having said that, I do think it works, but...
And I think it's because of the way that they handled it also in the beginning. The school teacher was really pointing out that somebody was doing something bad to someone else. Like the whole situation of...
That was so stupid, man. Jesus.
It was so stupid. And that exact incident could have been resolved, but not because but it didn't because of the way the adults assigned different kinds of meaning to it.
Yeah.
And I like that. Here, and especially when you see that there's something similar going on in the adult world, and then obviously they project their emotions onto the kids, so the kids are just acting, and the parents are misinterpreting and blowing things out of proportion.
Yeah, and I think how they resolve it in the end is really good as well. I didn't see it coming. I should have, but I didn't see it coming. Yeah. And it's overall, it's a very, very, very good show. And I'm happy they're picking up season two, mm-hmm. even though they didn't kind of left it open a little bit for season two, but not really, though. They resolved the whole thing.
I think this whole thing was pretty much resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, it's a self-contained thing. Mm-hmm. I also feel like the next one will probably be something completely different.
Probably. Right. We have Meryl Streep coming on. That's,
yes, I know.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is something that is exciting.
I
think one of the reasons why I was excited to see this one was also because of Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and Laura Dern mm-hmm. being in a TV series together. I mean, these are actresses that you rarely see in TV shows. Well, except for Laura Dern.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with that, and they seem they somehow from a different what do you say ilk mm-hmm. movie like blockbuster girls, Kidman and Witherspoon. The other one is not.
No.
Dern is not, but mm-hmm. they come together, and it's all good. It's so good that you kind of start picking at it a little bit to just get that out, because it's like not without its flaws, like I said.
No.
I'm not going to go like any further into that because it's not fair.
No. Yeah. No, and it's very good. And it's directed by the same guy who's doing Sharp Objects.
He's doing Sharp Objects, yeah?
Yes.
He did Dallas Buyers Club, Jean-Marc Vallée. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same person.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm excited about Sharp Objects that we're going to talk about later.
Yeah, we saw the first three season in Belgium. So
yeah,
so I'm waiting for that to kind of mm-hmm. progress a little bit before I pick it up again. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have
I need I need to get this one thing before we get into the main feature, which is Mission Impossible.
Yes.
But Ellen and I went on a date.
Ooh,
date night.
Nice.
Because Unter Träne.
Yes.
Under the Tree.
Under the Tree.
Was being screened in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
So of course we went in there. A small little cinema that I've talked about before. Vesta Volvo.
Yeah.
It's called such an amazing. I really have problems saying an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an amazing cinema. Very dark. Like you're used to having these green exit signs in cinemas in here. There was no light whatsoever. When they turn off the lights, it's dark. And it seemed like you were sitting in a little box watching this movie. But yeah, it was okay. Very cool situation.
Cool.
But yeah, we finally caught up with it. It was released 1 year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. It's a black comedy about parenthood. Like divorces, basically.
A dog and a tree.
And neighborhood feuds.
Yeah.
Or like neighborly feuds.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed watching this movie.
So you liked it overall?
Overall, I liked it, but
yeah.
You're also affected by being like tied to Iceland. There's something nice about seeing people going camping in front of IKEA, in Iceland. There's a lot of that Icelandic feeling.
Yeah,
that's just kind of nice to experience again. Yeah. So you were taking to that area. I did think that all the performances were generally pretty good. But my biggest complaint about this movie, and the reason why I'm not loving it, is that tonally, it didn't really know what it wanted. Like I said in the beginning, it's a black comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of chuckles throughout this movie, but they played them very black, so they could have been real dramatic situations. And I think if they had gone the whole way and saying this is serious, we're going to make this serious film, then it could have been something different, and maybe also focusing on one or the other of the stories. There was it was very disjointed with the guy who is breaking up, like getting a divorce with his girlfriend,
yeah,
and then a neighbor feud. And the neighbor feud played out kind of like a horror film.
Yeah.
And you know, they were trying different things. I like that. There were some really over-the-top moments in it that was funny. But, you know, stick to your guns a little bit. It seemed like it wanted to do a lot of things to me.
It's been a while since I saw it. And I noticed that I gave it 4 out of 5 and a little heart on Letterboxd. I don't know.
A little heart?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's not like settling all that well with me now, you know, because I remember the main guy, Stinti, he's a TV star. He did some really good sketch shows on Icelandic TV.
Yeah.
He's a funny guy. Yeah. But he's not really that good an actor, feel. And it bothered me a little bit after this time. Mm-hmm. But mostly I remember the hook in the end there.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end, what happened towards the end, which is really unexpected, I would say. And it's the overwhelming, what the stuff you remember about this when time passes is the ending. I don't think maybe it shouldn't also
the
be
one
like
incident
that.
with an animal.
Yes.
You know, but what is memorable is the feud between the neighbors.
Yeah.
So if they had doubled down on that, it could have been very good. It was also the best actors in the show or in the film.
Maybe the best actors Iceland has ever produced, because you have Siggi Sigurjóns, which is, he's great. And he was in Rams, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you have Thorsten Backman, who's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And Edda Björgvins, who's just like a comic actress. But she did really well as the heavily burdened mother there.
She did.
Yeah.
There was so much that you could read out of them.
Yeah.
Just watching them, and I was always slightly annoyed seeing the guy.
Yeah.
Stendi.
Yeah, he's ruining it a little bit for me as time passes. But maybe I should get back to it one day and just enjoy the good stuff there. Yeah. Because there's a lot of good stuff on offer there.
There is a lot of good stuff. It also has that black comedy that Iceland is known for, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a lot of black humor up there.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of the... I mean, it feels like you're back in Iceland when you watch this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, all the environments, very Icelandic, the houses, the, like, well, everything. So that's what I really liked about it.
I have a tidbit I can tell you about here. The tree, under the tree, plays a like a role here.
Yes.
But I can tell you that tree was not there. It was somewhere else.
It was in post.
And they, like... computerized it into
nice.
Every scene it was in. So
it's amazing what special effects can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, but I would recommend watching it and maybe disregard a little bit the whole setup in the beginning. It made me judge the movie in a different way. Than I probably should have.
Okay.
Like, because it seems a little bit like stupid. Just accept it and then move on. All right.
Okay.
So should we get into the main feature?
Yes. Let's finally do Mission Impossible Fallout.
There cannot be peace without first a great suffering. The greater the suffering, the greater the peace. The end you've always feared is coming. It's coming. And the blood will be on your hands.
Showtime.
Oh my God.
You just heard a clip from Mission Impossible Fallout, a movie where stakes can't really get any higher. We have black market uranium. We have highly portable nuclear bombs. And then we have one man who can end it all. Well, he's the only one who can actually save the world, and that is Tom Cruise.
Yeah, we kind of need that guy who says, one man.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he is the guy, and I was entertained with this movie. It's like over-the-top action sequences upon action sequences.
Yeah.
Fused with fairly bland acting. Were you entertained?
Well, let me start by saying this. I got some beer.
Great.
I'm not going to do fucking Tom Cruise without beer, you know?
No.
You don't do that.
It's good. No. Good. And it looked like a whole guy.
It is.
Yeah.
It's something I have.
You warmed up.
At all times.
You warmed up,
you know?
To it. Yes.
Yeah. It's 11 a.m. and I'm having a beer.
It's like one of those staples.
It's what I do.
In your fridge. Yeah.
Yes, or my garage, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was really entertained.
Yes.
It's like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it didn't feel like that.
It didn't feel like that, and it was just fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just...
It was.
The last thing we saw together, well, we did Jack Reacher something.
Two?
Which was awful. Just horrible.
Never Look Back.
Horrible, yeah. Never Look Back. appropriately named Never Look Back. Never go back to that stuff.
No.
But this, there's some kind of a tradition to this. And I must admit, I haven't seen, I maybe seen the first one because it was not really for me. But we decided to do this because, we need to kind of lessen the snobbery a bit, don't we?
Yeah, and there are many different kinds of movies.
Yeah, it was on.
Yeah.
It was playing.
And everybody is talking about it. And why not? The fun thing about the Jack Reacher 2, apparently it's the same director of Jack Reacher.
Really?
At least. Yes. Not the second one, but...
The first
Jack Reacher
way better.
Was... Yeah, that the was also was by better. Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah.
So this is... it's action through and through.
Yeah, to get back to your question, I was entertained the whole way through. Yes. It was just fun. Mm-hmm. There was appropriate amount of laughing and I got actual excitement out of it, you know? Mm-hmm.
You know why?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's a tradition that goes on now for a long time, and there must be some reason to it. It's just people mm-hmm. like this. You kind of like to get excited, and
you know, it's there's a lot of movie magic going around. You know, there's a lot of green screen, a lot of like fake stuff making things seem right.
Yes.
The reason why I was excited about many of the action sequences in this movie is that you can tell that this is close to happening for real. And and he did, like Tom Cruise did many of these things. All the people involved did many of these things.
Mm-hmm.
That is exciting. It's exciting to look at when you know that people are not just fighting on a green screen and a lot of superficial stuff is being added in post.
Very, very good point. the action, of course, is, like you say, way over the top, but
mm-hmm.
the scenes, like on the bike and dropping from that plane and all that, you read that it's real, and you can kind of feel it's real. I don't know if it is real, but they tell me it's real, so that actually means something.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you have behind-the-scene footage where you see that Tom Cruise is actually riding the bike, and they have a camera crew on a bike in front of him. You know, also the same thing with jumping out of a plane. You can tell that there's a lot of drone work going on in this movie as well when he's running across the rooftops of London. It's a lot of turning around, like... getting shots without editing together different shots. So you can tell that he's actually doing this stuff.
I read somewhere that when he was jumping from building to building, he ended up like just barely hanging on to the last one. He broke something in his leg or something.
He broke his ankle.
Something like that. But then he still finished the scene. You got to respect that.
Yeah.
I do respect that.
But that begs the question, is Tom Cruise a good actor or is he just like a daredevil? Is he like a stuntman who is doing it really well?
I hate to say it. I wouldn't say that. But no. I think he actually has definitely the star quality. But
yeah,
I think he has the craft as well at times.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown that in the past.
He's shown it in the past, but still, he is pretty one note. This guy has one object. He has one. He's determined, you know, on saving the world.
Yes.
And this guy knows that he's the only one to save it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can argue with what you know of this guy that maybe this is how he feels in real life and maybe he's not even acting. You know? Like he's just determined.
Oh,
like for acting, for doing this movie, anything. Like and I feel like you can see it in his face sometimes when people are telling him, they're literally telling him in this movie, you are the only one to save this world.
So you think maybe Tom Cruise is saving the world one movie at a time?
Basically,
are you connecting that video sent me of him talking about Scientology?
So.
I mean, you can't mention Tom Cruise without mentioning Scientology.
No.
And I kind of don't want to do that this time.
No,
because I think he didn't make a boo-boo this time. He made a good one. He made a good movie.
He did.
I mean,
but there's a lot of him just saving the world.
Yeah. I mean, he's got mad skills. He's 56 now. I mean, Ethan Hunt, is it? Yeah. He's got mad skills. But I must admit, I admire the fact that the action, the fight scenes, like in the bathroom, I loved that. It was kind of nod to the fact that Tom Cruise is 56 now. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, over-rehearsed, over-produced scenes where they have like all these moves. It was more random, I felt.
Yeah. And it's visceral.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the Jason Bourne type action, where you have action scenes that are very tense, dense, well choreographed, but they're over in 5 seconds, basically.
I think I disagree with you. I think the Jason Bourne thing is over choreographed compared to this. I think this was more real, and it kind of nodded to the fact that he's 56, and he was a bit tired, and but he's still got mad skills, of course. But
he had a younger person with him in the bathroom who could take care of.
Yes. How did you like Henry Cavill this?
I liked him, actually.
Yeah.
You know, he's a major part of the plot, obviously.
Yeah. No spoilers? What do you think?
No spoilers. Okay. I mean, there's so little to spoil in this film, except for like one spoiler. Yeah. So let's stay clear of that.
Yeah.
But I actually with the plot here, I actually liked it. I mean, it was double crossing. It was everybody wanted different things, and everybody is bad and everybody is good in the same time. You know, a lot of this stuff. But I was actually liking how things changed. It was like first you were on one side, then you were on another side, and you know, it ebbed and flowed all the way through.
I wrote down the story is complete nonsense, you know.
Yeah.
It is complete nonsense. But that kind of doesn't matter here. It's just structured well enough for it to work. And people don't go to these things for the story. They go to these things to be entertained.
Yes.
And that is what happened here.
But I actually do think that the story worked. Like it worked well enough, but I was actually also engaged in its twists and turns, even though it is complete nonsense.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's good enough to keep you engaged, and you don't sit through like 148 minutes of action scenes without, you have to be engaged in some kind of a plot story thing. I mean, it's stupid, of course, and the whole thing with the girl and all that was just a little bit weird, but not weird enough for me to take me out of it. Can I
no? Yes.
Say those you words you have copyrighted?
You can. You can. Okay. It was not enough for me either. Yeah.
But what I like about it is its honesty. Mm-hmm. This is just an action film. It's a franchise film.
Yeah.
And it's just pure fun. And it's funny as well. Mm. And I don't mean in the way it's supposed to be funny.
No.
It was not. No. I don't think Wing Rames and Simon Pegg
were supposed to be funny.
They were supposed to be the comic relief. But really, for me, they weren't.
No,
I think they played some part in it, I guess. But they
it was
don't...
more funny when Tom Cruise tried to show emotions.
Yes. It was funny. I remember one scene. I thought the fight scene in the bathroom was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I thought the scene when he runs, when he's running through that office, that's funny. Mm-hmm. I thought when he's jumping out that window of the office, when he looks back, That's funny.
Yeah.
I think he's funny when with these little nuances himself, Tom Cruise. I think that was funny for me.
I think it was funny when he was walking out to check whether it was a good time to jump off of the plane and looking like a tough guy the way he was walking, you know? And I think it's fun also to see how he's just like so determined in catching people and just like running.
Yeah.
He's just like, he's just gone.
That's commitment. That's commitment to running.
And you know, Mission Impossible, the franchise is known for him running, and you know it's fun to look at. There's something about it, it's just fun to look at.
It's good running
and the determination. I think I've said it before, what I like about Tom Cruise is that you can tell, even though the plot is bogus and you know the stakes are just incredibly high and stuff like that, he's just determined to go there and do it.
Yeah.
You know? And you can tell in his eyes. And that's... It's just fun.
The magic of Tom Cruise. yeah. Yeah, respect. I've always said I respect genre films when they're just made like they should be made. I like romantic comedies that are well made. Yeah. You know? Even though I don't really respect the genre that much. Mm-hmm. But this is just good on exactly the right level.
But then again... You do have a 2018 movie here on our hands.
Yes.
But it feels very, like, except for all the stunts and all the camera work being quite, like, 2018. The story and the feeling I got from this movie was very 90s, especially with the comic relief, the action movie that didn't really take itself too serious.
Like, yeah.
Like, but still serious enough in certain situations, and also the fact that, you know, the main characters, well, Tom Cruise is doing some ludicrous stuff in order to save the world, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one scene with helicopters where he has to figure out what to do, and
that was funny.
Apparently, his solution is to ram a helicopter midair, and that will be fine. You know, that's very 90s, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of last Boy Scout kind of a thing. Kind of,
yeah.
To name any 90s, you know, action film. But yeah, like I said before, the honesty of it. But they also kind of don't fall into the traps you can fall into with these kind of films. They don't over rehearse the fight scenes, like I mentioned. They don't.
No.
Yeah. The editing is not green grass editing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's not.
I mean, they because they really want to show that this is being done in real time.
Yeah.
It's done for real. That's why the drone work on top of the rooftops and stuff like that. You want to see that they're actually doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And green grass editing, like, I don't know how many edits per second, that doesn't really convey that sense.
It doesn't convey the sense that it doesn't take it too seriously. That kind of thing kind of doesn't, for me, takes itself too seriously if you put that much into it with the cutting.
Yeah.
And that scene you mentioned with the helicopters and that whole thing, I was just, I had a moment in the theater. I was excited and it was fun. And I was looking at it and I was thinking, wow, this is stupid. This is incredibly stupid. Yeah. when that time when they have like, I mean, it's not a spoiler. The helicopters crash. There's a helicopter chase. Well, I mean,
they even see it in the trailer. I watched the trailer afterwards, and they give away the whole movie there.
Yeah.
So
they crash helicopters, and of course, Tom Cruise and the bad guy, they come out unscathed.
Yes.
Pretty much. And then
the other pilot, where was he?
He was
obviously just dead.
Obviously, yes. Both pilots die, of course. Yeah. But the point I wanted to make is that they have these crashes, and of course nothing happens to the main guys, and then they kind of fall off a cliff and whatever, and they're still like, there's nothing that happens to them really. And then I had a moment in the theater when I laughed so hard. Last time I did that was watching Ace Ventura in a theater, the first one, when the bad guy gets some kind of something on his face, something, some pipe bursts, and he gets something on his face, and he goes, and he starts screaming in pain. I couldn't take it. I just lulled, you know, I just burst out laughing, and I was trying to hold it in because people, you don't want to like make fun of it. I wasn't doing that actually, but
no,
it was just so funny to me that the whole scene where they have helicopter crashes and in every in reality everybody would be long dead, yes. But then that is the moment when he starts screaming in agony. He gets something on his face.
Yeah.
Turns out it was a little more severe than I thought at that moment.
Yes.
But
yeah.
And it's just I loved it. I didn't take anything away from it. It was just love the honesty of this thing, and just I'm happy we did this. I'm happy I went to the theater.
Actually, I'm happy too, because I rarely go to the cinema to watch this kind of movie, and it's probably what cinemas are made for,
like
over the top audio visuals, all that kind of stuff, and then just action.
Yeah.
You were saying that you didn't feel this was very choreographed.
Yeah.
I do feel like the club showdown in that club afterwards in the bathroom.
Okay.
It was much more choreographed.
Yeah.
But I really liked that, you know? I liked how smooth that was. I mean, Tom Cruise and the Black... No, the not the Black Widow. That's a different franchise. The White Widow?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Princess Margaret from The Crown. Yeah.
Yeah, they're leaving the club and people are kind of like attacking them on the way out. Yeah. And there's this one little scene with I think her name in the movie was Ilsa, like love interest of
Rebecca Ferguson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Swedish, I think.
Mm. Well, there we have the Swedish connection.
Yes.
So there's this one scene, one clip. I think it's only 1 second or something. There's a henchman coming towards Tom Cruise and the White Widow, and she's there just observing the whole situation. And then you have 1 second of her jumping in, cracking the neck of this henchman, and just getting up and walking away as if it was nothing. And I was just looking at that and thinking, That was really well made, because they didn't make a fuss about anything. It was just like snap, and it worked out. She was like I don't know, like a bodyguard or something. And they exit the club and they come out in this very cool way, all like positioned in the right way, like woman, Tom Cruise and guy. You know, and then they switch to the other side, and they're also like separated in distance there on the side. Like it was all very cool and clean, but it worked. You know, it lent itself very much to this DJ club thing and lights. And another thing with the lights. Sorry, last point. J.J. Abrams.
Was the
producer, and there's a lot of lens flare throughout this movie, but it's not the traditional lens flare. It's very much like straight lens flares throughout the movie. Did you notice?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about here.
Okay, so when light hits the camera, there's a flare coming up. Okay. You know, J.J. Abrams loves to do this. Like sometimes his movies are just filled with like lens light, lens flares. This one is different, and all the lens flares are horizontal, kind of showing this like progression, like always moving forward and running through the scene. And they had a lot of that, especially in that that one scene in the club, because there's so many lights. I loved the way that had like made itself into the movie. So yeah.
Just to recap a little bit, overall feeling very, very good. I gave it like 7 out of 10. That's pretty good. It's pretty good for Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. Cameos, you have good actors. You have Alec Baldwin coming on and Angela Bassett, of course.
Angela Bassett.
And it felt a little bit like they were doing Saturday Night Live. I wrote that down for some reason. But it all goes to the same, well, it doesn't take itself too seriously. And like that scene you mentioned, I thought it was silly because they were, why not use a gun, you know? if you want to get in. Yeah. Jackie Chan-ish a little bit, that scene. But
that whole sequence.
I agree it worked. It was fun. And you don't take it seriously, and it's great. I had a great time. 2.5 hours in the cinema.
Me too.
Yeah. So
the one little drawback here is Ving Rhames, he has a scene where he's explaining how much Tom Cruise cares.
I wrote that down. I just wrote down, I could have done without that, Ving Rhames.
Yes. I mean, and I feel bad for Ving Rhames for having to do that.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Tom Cruise being denied trying to do some decent acting here and explaining it himself, you know.
Let's be honest, there's a lot of dropbacks here.
Yeah, he's just the punchline in that one. Well, but it's still a really fun movie. I still gave it 3 out of 5 stars. You know,
that's 6 out of 10.
But it was fun. I have one thing.
Okay.
Nordic Connections.
Okay. Do it.
Yes, little segment. I'm thinking we're putting in here.
Besides American films. Rebecca Ferguson.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And I actually needed that Swedish one because I have the other, most of the other Nordic countries here. The uranium black market dealer, who is credited as the European, that is Kasper Philipsen, who is obviously Danish with his Danish accent.
Yes.
He gets, not quite spoiler alert, but he gets killed off within 3 sentences.
Yeah, that's not a spoiler.
No, not really. Then we have the catalyst of this whole story, the doctor, the engineer who has been creating these highly portable nuclear bombs, Nils
something something
Vanderbroek.
Yeah, Vanderbroek, like a Dutch name.
Yes, but. Apparently, he was Norwegian.
He was Norwegian, yeah.
And I think he was played by a Norwegian. I think I detected a Norwegian accent.
Yeah, he had a manifesto and all, and the tagline from that was a little bit of a drawback for me. But I'm not doing drawbacks. This was fun. Well, there's a lot of drawbacks, but...
Then again, did he do the manifesto? We'll see. Now, anyway...
Let's make a pact. We'll do the next one as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because we're not snobs. No. You know, we're snobs, but not, you know, we want
not like
we're,
that.
We're recovering
and also
snobs.
when the main people here are actually from the Nordic countries.
Yeah.
We're all in.
All in.
Tom Cruise figured out that there's a server somewhere in the world.
Iceland. Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes. That was so exciting for us.
I saw the picture. I was like, hey, that's Iceland. And then they even, like, I think Alec Baldwin says it. The server is located in Iceland. And I was thinking, are they doing the same thing as Jason Bourne, where they go to Iceland and have that one shot up there? Yes. But no, they just wanted to know where the server was. And yes, exactly. There's a lot of servers in Iceland. Apparently, that's what Iceland can be useful for.
So that means Alec Baldwin and some guy from Jason Bourne have uttered the word Iceland.
Words Iceland, yes.
In film. So we're all very proud.
We're all very proud.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's it. I think that's it. I think anything else?
That is it. Yeah. No thanks.
So
no
next thanks. Time we have no idea. We'll just see.
Not quite.
Oh.
Okay. I'm interested in Gus Van Sant's new movie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, he won't get far on foot. Well,
Joaquin tell you what, Rune.
Phoenix is a good actor, and we have Jack Black and Jonah Hill.
I'll just tell you right now that Gus Van Sant is one of the episodes available on WTF.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to say
check
that.
Check
that one.
Yeah.
But this movie also stars Udo Kier. Do you know Udo Kier?
I feel like I should.
Lars von Trier loves him. He's one of the really bad people in the TV show Riz, The Kingdom Hospital, by Lars von Trier. So Udo Kier is a special place in my, maybe not heart, but head.
Oh, he looks evil.
Yeah, he looks evil.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
He does. He has kind of these bulging eyes.
Yeah.
And then you were saying Black Klansman also.
Yeah, maybe Black Klansman. I'm
the new
that
joint
one because I want to connect it to like a film I love, mm-hmm. which is Do the Right Thing.
Yeah. Yes.
So maybe
Let's
we'll see.
Yeah. And then we have Die Utrolige 2 coming up in Danish cinemas now.
Yes.
Incredibles 2. Look forward to a re-release of our already recorded discussion of that movie.
Yeah, maybe not though. But
no.
You said something about best friends or best
yes,
fiends?
Best fiends.
Yeah.
Friends coming out on streaming the 25th of September everywhere. Mm-hmm. The first part of Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero's new movie 15 years later. Because of that, I realized that the second part of that movie is being screened in a cinema here the 28th of August.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen the first part. I can't go to the cinema and see the second part. We'll have to wait until 25th of September. And they say the second part will be available for streaming in January.
Excellent.
Yes. Anyway, I think that concludes our show this time.
Yeah.
Right?
That was fun. The morning show, I got to have beer anyway, so I couldn't, you know.
I got to have beer, lots of energy here.
Yeah.
Like,
good.
I'm looking forward to going to a birthday party now. Yeah.
Full of Tom Cruise energy, yeah.
Yes. I'm just going to go like that.
Run really fast.
No stopping me.
Yeah.
No stopping me.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for listening, and see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, maybe you mentioned we were everywhere. We'd always do that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Find us.
Find us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and go to our fabulous website, theconversationpodcast.net.
I'm actually using Google Podcasts now for as a podcatcher, and it's there. And
it's there.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. And give us some stars on iTunes.
That'd be good.
I've heard that.
Preferably five. Yes.
Preferably five. But I mean, if we don't deserve any more, it's up to you.
Yeah,
I don't want to encourage you to give us five, but that would be good.
That'd be good, yes.
Okay.
Okay, that's it for today. We'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Bye-bye now.
What did you give on Letterboxd? I'm just, you know...
Three?
Yeah. I was actually asking about under the tree. Seems pretty...
Okay, three.
Seems pretty good. Pretty good.
Three rating. Also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different three kind of stars.
Very different three, yes.
Yeah.